The Art of Leadership Network.
Welcome to the Smart Family Podcast, where we want to help you love being home. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rob Meter and Tony Newhoff.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smart Family Podcast. Once again, I am your co-host, Dr. Rob Meter. It's great that you have made time once again to listen in. We really hope that these podcast episodes inspire and encourage you, both as parents and as spouses, and really as valuable members of your families. And we really truly do want you to love being home. Well, today we've got something a little different. We talk to author Max Lucado. Now, my guess is that perhaps half of you know Max Lucado and another half of you have maybe never heard of him. I know that I myself, as a kid growing up in and into my adult years even, I have seen Max Lucado's name many, many times on the cover of one of the many, many books that he has written over the years. There are usually books of inspiration and devotion, specifically about the Christian faith. And I'm sure there are three or four of his titles on my bookshelf here at home. Now, as many of you also know, my area of interest professionally is, as a pediatrician, is mental health. I live and breathe this day in and day out. Over the years, I have come to realize, though, that so often we neglect, or at least we kind of dance around, the concept of spirituality and how much a faith perspective might impact mental health. I realize that for more than a few people, religion has been a negative influence on mental health, but I also realize that a worldview which incorporates a faith perspective has also been a lifeline and a source of purpose and meaning for literally billions of others on the planet. So I think it's important that we talk about why that is, if it is indeed such an important part of so many people's lives. Now, I recognize that in our diverse listener audience, there are likely a number of faith perspectives represented, or maybe even many of you for whom faith is not a significant part of your life at all. But for myself and Tony, faith has been an important part of our life journey, specifically in our case, the Christian faith. And so that is why the name Max Lucado is a household name in my house. And if you're not a Christian, this all might seem a little new. If you are of a different faith, I think much of what we talk about will still make sense. And if you don't subscribe to a faith at all, well, just please listen in and with an open mind. And see how this all relates perhaps to mental health and relationships. In a way, we talk about aspects of identity from other angles. Learning about people's spiritual identity is equally vital, and perhaps this might be that opportunity for you to learn more about why, for millions, having a faith in a God is so life-giving and contributes positively to mental health. Again, for some of you, this may seem like a foreign concept, and for the rest of you, this makes perfect sense. But I sure enjoy talking to Max about it today. So Max has written a book for children about loneliness. It's such an encouraging little book for parents to read to their children or for kids a bit older to read to themselves. Despite the fact that we are a more connected society than ever, loneliness is rampant. So many people feel disconnected from others, and this has a corrosive effect on mental health. So what can we do to ensure that our youngest children don't experience this loneliness? And so I thought, wouldn't it be great to have Max share his perspectives today as we discuss mental health, loneliness, and how for Max and I, as a Christian faith perspective, has been so powerful and an antidote to loneliness. Max is a pastor, so it is probably no surprise that he talks about the topic of Christianity with enthusiasm. He is the pastor of Oak Hills Church in San Antonio, Texas. He has written over 40 books, which have collectively sold more than 145 million copies and appeared numerous times on the New York Times bestseller list. He has been on many podcasts, shows, interviews, and I really enjoyed talking to Max, and I hope you will enjoy listening in on our conversation today. Max, welcome to the Smart Family Podcast. I'm so glad you can speak with us today.
It is my honor. It truly is. I'm excited to hear about your world and your work and maybe get a few words from you on as to how we can help, especially young people, face this crisis of loneliness.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we'll get into maybe some more details of that in a minute. But I want to raise this here. A few years ago, you wrote a book called Just In Case You Ever Wonder, and it was a beautiful story reminding children just of how loved they are. And now you follow that up with Just In Case You Ever Feel Alone. And why was this something that you felt that kids needed to read or have read to them? It's a book for younger kids. Why did you want to tackle this topic of loneliness?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I wrote Just In Case You Ever Wonder. I want to say, Rob, that might have been 1992.
Oh, okay. A while ago.
Yeah, a while ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back before you were in med school, I'm sure.
Yes, it was.
So I wrote that for my own kids. Mm-hmm. And because I wanted to have a statement that I could read to my kids every night just to give them some assurance before they fell asleep. Just in case you ever wonder, if you're ever afraid, if you're ever lonely, if you're ever discouraged, I'm here just in case you ever wonder. It kind of followed that, or it did follow that rhythm. My publisher about 3 or 4 years ago said, we're coming up on the anniversary of that book. Would you be interested in a series of just in case books for children, you know, 3 to 8 years of age, 3 to 6, something like that. And I thought about that. And by now, Rob, I'm a grandpa and I have my grandchildren are pretty much the same age my children were when I was writing these stories for them. So all of a sudden I had a new audience. So I started paying attention to what kids are experiencing, especially my own grandchildren. And the very first one that bubbled to the surface was this idea of loneliness. And I began reading statistics that you've read, I'm sure, a dozen times about how lonely young people are, which strikes me as so ironic because we're so connected through social media. But that connectivity is not translating into feelings of assurance and confidence. In fact, apparently it's contributing to, we may be distracted and entertained, but we're anxious and troubled and lonely. This is a very long answer to your question, isn't it? So I think bottom line is, I got this invitation from the publisher. Let's do a whole new series of Just In Case books. And the very first idea that I thought needed to be addressed is this idea of loneliness.
You know, you actually dedicate the book to a grandson or who was just born, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's 6 months old now. Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, as a grandfather, you're making sure that he doesn't feel alone. But tell me, when you were growing up, did you ever feel alone? What was your experience like with loneliness, if you did have that or not?
Yes, I did. I battled a fear of disapproval. And I've struggled with that to one degree or another my entire life. I love pleasing people. I love making and sensing the approval of others. As with everything, you know, Rob, some of that's great because I really get I get very excited when I see the church learn something new from result of my message, or I'm able to talk with somebody and help them through a tough time. That's wonderful. That's the good side of that. The bad side is I get addicted to it. And if I don't feel like I am receiving ample approval of people, that's when I feel lonely. I feel like I am marginalized. And as a youngster, I can remember that. It creates a kind of a performance-based self-image, right? Sure. I do well as long as people perceive me as successful. But if they don't, then I will struggle with feelings of insecurity. And so, I can recall as a youngster feeling that sense of loneliness.
Thank you for sharing that. And you know, I think we all struggle to that to some extent. We want to be perceived by others as being important and valuable, yet we also want to know that we intrinsically have value, and that we are love no matter what we do and what we say. And I think that comes through in your book that you've just written, and such a powerful message, I think, for children and for adults. I was when I read your book, when I hear you speak, I'm like, this book is for kids, but I think it is as much a message for parents as it is for children. There's huge reminders in there of what we as parents need to be for our children.
Yeah. So much of life is about perceiving the world correctly. You know, as Christians, of course, undeniably, the Mount Everest size takeaway is eternal salvation. Hmm. I mean, that's, you know, if Jesus did nothing more for me than save my soul for eternity, he'd done it all. However, there is this wonderful benefit of having access to the worldview that works, that there is a God, that he does care, that life can stink, but we'll get through it. You know, if I can, that's a very rudimentarily worded worldview. But if I believe there is a God, I believe he does care. You know what? Life is going to be rough, but we get through it all. That's huge. And if we can give that to our young people, to our children, you don't have to have a great imagination to realize how difficult it is if you don't have that worldview. You know, if your worldview says, I'm just an accident, no one cares about me, life stinks, and I'm never going to get through it. Well, no wonder their anxiety is off the charts. You know, no wonder depression is off the charts. And obviously, the most distressing statistic is that suicide is the highest it's been since World War II. I don't think you have to be a social scientist to connect the dots that secularism creates a sad soul. It does. And the Christian faith, albeit messed up a lot by a lot of, you know, people who take advantage of it and profiteer off it, I get all that. But at its core, if you believe God loves you, God is, and God loves you, it's going to be tough, but we're going to get through it. That is, you're handing me a life jacket in a stormy sea. Would you agree, Rob?
Yeah, certainly. And that's certainly a message that I have four kids myself. And that was sort of a core message we wanted to give to them as well. We wanted to have them, that faith perspective. There was more to life. There was something beyond them that was, that care, you know, God cared for them. And that's, I think, huge for a child to have in their knowledge base, and to feel that in a real way. And so it's good to get that, not just from us as parents, but also from those around them. When we took them to church on Sundays, you know, that was a message that continued to be reinforced. And so it does give them that confidence and that love and that acceptance that they need to be able to get through some of the tough parts of their life. So yeah, for sure. I agree.
You know, one of the challenges that we parents have is finding ways to articulate this worldview in a way that children will understand. Mm. And that's why we need books. That's why we need videos or access to some video messages that are healthy. Because finding the words to say is not always easy. And then secondly, I think the big challenge too is time. I don't know. There's not any way easy solution to this, but I'm a grandparent now, and I have a lot more time than I had when I really needed it when my children were small. You know, I was leading a growing church, and I was managing some bunch of things, maybe things I didn't need to be managing. I wish now I've got a little more time on my hands. I don't have as many responsibilities as I used to have. And so I'm very sympathetic to people who have especially small children in the home who are trying to either build a career or find a career or just make a living. Oftentimes both parents are working. It's rough. So we need to help each other as much as we can. And that's why I really am a strong believer in children's literature, because it enables me to have a language with which I can speak with my child, so I can, you know, dig into these deep topics, but in a playful way, so that I'm equipping them with the right language that they're going to need if they ever need to express these feelings.
Absolutely, yeah. There's something about reading to a child that is this beautiful, you know, shared experience that I think there's something unique about it, reading with a child. We encourage, as a pediatrician, we encourage all parents to do that with their kids. So thanks for providing another book that we can read with them.
Rob, can I ask, how old are your children?
Oh, they're teenagers now. They're between, I have four kids between the ages of 14 and 19.
Wow. So you keep busy in a whole different way.
It is busy, but you know, I love the teenage stage, actually. I was kind of worried about it, but I love the stage of teenagers. But what it's also made me realize as a pediatrician is how extremely vital those first few years of life are. I mean, that's where the brain is set up in its development. You know, that's where all the key messages are just so much more relevant, because the brain is just growing and developing so dynamically in those first few years of life. That, you know, by the time they're teenagers, you know, you have still some influence, but it's much more difficult than it is when they were younger. So parents of young children have a really unique opportunity to influence their children.
Really unique. My oldest daughter has a couple of children of her own, but she also does foster care. Oh, yeah. And so she does not foster to adopt.
Okay.
But she fosters just to provide a safe place. And it's been interesting to me that these small children, I think her oldest one was five, that they've all come with developmental issues, oftentimes speech issues. And I'm sure there's a connection that a professional like you could draw there. They're dear children, blessed children, and they've just been through trauma so early in life that it's hard for them to process it. So I hear what you're saying, because had they been in a home that was free of that trauma, you know, there's no doubt. Don't you think that they're developed? Something stunts the developmental process if there's violence or isolation or loneliness, and the little brain's just not equipped to handle that.
Absolutely. And sadly, you know, as a society, we sometimes think that babies are just sort of oblivious or kind of resilient to what goes on around them, that they just don't remember it and it doesn't impact them the way it might an older child. But yet that's when they're actually the most vulnerable. That's when their brain is most vulnerable to trauma and stress, and really, you know, sets them up for potentially a lifetime of mental health and physical health challenges. So again, just that importance. If I want to support any sort of people that I see every day, it would be the young families, because that's where I think we can make the most difference.
I agree. And I think a practical bit of counsel too is one of the greatest gifts, maybe the greatest gift you can give your small child, is to love the other parent. If you dads can love the mom of your child, trying to get the words right in my mouth.
Yeah.
Moms, if you can, you know, honor and love your husband, that there's something there that it makes the child feel safe.
Totally.
And conversely, if there's tension in the home, if there's disruption or eruption, you know, eruptive anger, that causes the child to. My parents were not perfect by any means, but I always look back and I can remember my dad flirting with my mom getting embarrassed, saying, "Jack, don't talk that way in front of the boys," and, you know, and him winking at her, you know, little things like that. Rob, I don't think I realized it, but that was telling me, okay, things are good right here between mom and dad. So that little flirt, that little back and forth, that loving one another. So I'm a big advocate too for young families. And then for young families, taking time, not you're helping your kids if you take time to love your spouse. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, so important. And those years, they go by so fast. And
how many times do we say that? And yet it needs to be said. I don't think we can say it enough.
Yeah.
I remember when my kids were born, people older than me would say, it's going to go by fast. I heard it so much, I wanted to say, quit saying that. And now I catch myself saying that. Think about it, a few 5, 10, 15 years, that's going to fly. It's going to fly.
Yeah. But, if you look at where we put our mental health resources, at least here in Canada, it's all towards, teenagers and adults. We don't really think of mental health as being so vital in those early years. And so hopefully we get that message across today. So
that's a great point.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier, you said, as a society, we're technologically more connected than ever. I think this is the ironic thing that people struggle with. They're like, I can call so-and-so and I can text so-and-so. I mean, 50 years ago, you'd have to do a long distance call for 30 seconds every 3 months to connect with somebody far away and you'd pay a fortune for it. Now it's like you were on Zoom calls all over the place. Even during COVID, we were connecting with everybody via video links, et cetera. And yet there's this epidemic of loneliness out there. I mean, there's different statistics, but a huge chunk of our population is feeling more lonely than ever. How do you square those two seemingly opposite truths?
Well, you've seen it. I saw it just the other day. I was in a fast food place and I was by myself. I was in between appointments. I ran in to eat something, sat at a booth, and in comes four young people. They were all wearing a shirt from a particular local college, so I assume they're students. And they had their meals and they sat down and I don't think they said more than four or five words to each other. They pulled out their phones and as they ate, rather than talk, they were texting or I don't know what all they were doing. That to me helps me understand why there's so much loneliness. We wonder a fair question. What is going undeveloped that needs to be developing as these four kids are looking in their phones instead of talking with one another? Mm-hmm. The verbal back and forth, the sharing of opinions, learning to agreeably, all these little basic communication skills that come with practice, that come with rehearsal. And then also the fact that you can communicate your feelings, learning to verbally articulate your feelings, not just with an emoji, but with really expressing yourself in a deep conversation. So I think some of the answer is found there, that we're just leaving soil untilled, if you will, that needs to be developed in order for this loneliness to be dealt with.
Yeah, and I've thought about this a lot as a pediatrician working in this field. I think, and maybe tell me what your thoughts are on this, but I think there's something significantly different about being with someone face-to-face in person than, say, on Zoom or on a video chat. I know, like, for example, we're talking here on Zoom. It's a conversation, but yet qualitatively, there's something different here than if we were sitting in the same room having a cup of coffee together. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I feel like that's missed.
I agree 100%. In fact, I like to place a lot of the cause of the political hostility that we have in the States at the feet of the echo chambers that we've created, because you can watch you can select your cable network that agrees with everything you say, and then you can react online with everybody who agrees with what you say. But if you and I are in the same room, Rob, but we come from two different perspectives, but we're just going to talk this through. I want to hear what you have to say. you say, okay, I want to hear what you have to say. That's healthy. That's yeah. healthy. That enables, you know, that old phrase, the meeting of the minds. Well, if the minds are never face to face, they're never going to meet. So I agree. And I think that's something that parents can create, this healthy practice of good conversation around a dinner table or around a, you know, coffee table, that's going to really pay off for their kids.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's that, it's almost that yeah. emotional connection. It's something yeah. when you look into somebody's eyes, like even now, yeah. like I'm looking at a Zoom screen. I see you, but I'm seeing an image of you and you're seeing an image right. of me. We're not like those very subtle cues. You know, you'd be surprised how much young children and babies pick up those cues. Is mom looking at me or is she looking at her phone? You know, mm-hmm. what's the reaction to how, like this back and forth? It's just hard to recreate that, I think, on technology.
I agree.
I love these lines in your book. You say, is your day full of sighing? Do you feel like crying? Are you tired of trying because nothing is going right? I care. I'll be there. My arms will squeeze you tight. I love that because it talks about an emotional connection. It talks about just validating and understanding big emotions. And I think for a lot of parents, that might seem a bit daunting, especially maybe dads. I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit because sometimes we want to just, you know, or we think our sons need to be tough and that showing your emotion is maybe a sign of weakness. Any advice for parents who might feel a little bit less comfortable with that type of connection?
And the also parents would feel that they're in charge of fixing that. The fact right. that their children are feeling that, you know, parents could say, well, it's my fault. They take it personally or get over that quickly or here's what you have to do. So again, dads maybe more than, no doubt more than moms get into that fix it mindset. So, you know, emotion 101 says emotions are emotions. They're just mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And as you know, they can be caused by a variety of factors. You know, a cloudy day. I should, you know, I think I should be happy today, but it's, the thing is this weather there. That's valid. That's valid. You know, maybe you know, the hormones are going wacko on you. Maybe you really are happy, but then you get to the office and everybody else is cranky and it's just contagious. So, you know, emotions are emotions. Emotions in and of themselves are not facts. I like that old saying, sometimes you got to take your emotions outside and just give them a good talking to. I think there's something to that. You know, you acknowledge, okay, I'm in a bit of a funk today, bit of a sad spirit today. Lord, where did this come from? Where did this come from? I know it's not your will that I be sour today. Would you help me? And, you know, another old saying that I like, every fruit has a root. You know, there's a fruit out there of discontent, trace it back. What caused that? When did it start? And pray about that. And to answer your question, Rob, this is a tool we can teach our kids. You know, just say, hey, don't feel bad for feeling bad. It's okay. You know, I accept you that you feel bad. Climb up here in my lap. Let's just talk about it. Tell me about your day. You know, and just go there. So I don't think we gain much by being critical of the emotion. I do think we gain much by helping our children understand that emotions are like the weather. They just come, they go. And sometimes we're responsible. Sometimes we're not, and that's okay. But we can always try to go upstream and say, what caused this? Where did it come from? There's a fruit out here, but what's the root? And I believe a healthy prayer practice, Rob, is to say, Lord, I don't know why I'm so, and you fill in the blank. I just don't know why it is what it is. Would you help me to see what is causing this? I find myself praying that quite a bit. Sometimes I perceive an answer. Sometimes it's a long time before I perceive an answer. But at least I've got it out on the table, and it's a practical tool that I can use.
Max, I want to wrap up with this question because it's fair to say that probably a number of our listeners on our podcast, they don't share a faith perspective or maybe a strong spiritual connection. And clearly it's part of your book. It's, well, you're a pastor, so it's what you do. It's who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, for many in our culture, they have not grown up with a faith community, with a spiritual community. I'm kind of keeping it general here because it can be so variable. But for parents who maybe did not experience that growing up, you mentioned you did and it was important for you. Why would you say that is an important aspect of who we are and why it's important for kids to know that God loves them?
Well, we used the phrase earlier, a worldview. Hmm. Everybody has a worldview, and that's the way you see the world. That's the lens through which you make decisions. And so if your worldview has no hope to it, if your worldview has no divine affirmation to it, that's going to create a certain type of life, certain type of outlook on life. If your worldview does have divine aspiration and divine affirmation and hope, that's going to create another kind of person. So our worldview is huge. It's just huge. And so let's say that you're a hesitant believer or maybe a skeptical person about faith, and yet you want to convey hope to your children. Why don't you give God a chance? Just give God a chance. You don't have to embrace everything that maybe a bad religious experience brought you, or other things that you hear other people saying, but just start with the possibility that a good God wants what's good for you. Would you please consider just starting there? What does that mean? That means saying, okay, God, let's get acquainted. If you're there, I'm going to believe, I'm going to start behaving and believing like you're there, but I've got a few questions I need to ask you. We need to have some heart-to-heart conversations. That's awesome. That's great. That's where you start. In fact, many of us, that's where we live. We're still having these heart-to-heart conversations, you know. But faith is just is choosing to believe that a good God is going to do good things. That's it. Now, I know you want that for your kids. And so invite them into that adventure with you. And the next time they have a math quiz that's got them anxious at night, as you help them work through those math problems, say, hey, honey, why don't we ask God to help us and pray? Wow, what an element you're bringing into that conversation. So you don't have to, you know, just take it one step at a time. Start right there and see where it takes you.
But obviously you're not saying like, this is just kind of one more tool in your toolbox, you know, add kind of spirituality to the mix. And it's much deeper than that, I would suspect.
Much deeper. We're talking about why we're on earth and where we're headed.
Yeah.
So it's huge. It's huge.
Well, if you think of like, what's the driver behind depression, the underlying factor is hopelessness.
Yeah. There,
you feel hopeless. You feel like, you know, life's not worth living in the worst kind of representation.
Absolutely.
Of that. And so we need hope. We can't live without hope.
We cannot. We cannot. And the Bible is all about hope. It really is. It's about that God loves you. He cares for you. He's got a plan. And this life is very, very brief. And the next life is beyond words, beyond our capacity to understand it. If I have that, if I can hold on to that, I can get through just about anything. But if you tell me that life is nothing more than what happens between birth and hearse, and I've got to make as much good out of it as fast as I can because it's going fast, that's going to cause me to be frustrated and depressed. So hope, I think what we're talking about in a word is hope.
Well, thanks. We'll wrap up on that because that's a hopeful message to wrap up on. And and it's so good for mental health, and it's so good for parents to hear that, and it's so good for children to hear that. And as we mentioned earlier, the sooner we can start filling our kids' lives with hope and meaning, the better they will do later on in life. And so a cheer for all the young families out there. And thanks for cheering them on too with me, Max. I really appreciate your words today.
Thank you. It's a great honor. Really a treat to meet you. Keep
Likewise.
Up the great work. I hope we get to cross trails again.
You as well. We'll link to the book in the show notes, and I really appreciate the amazing words that you've written in there. So thanks for inspiring us.
Thank you.
Well, that was really interesting. I think this is so interesting to delve into the topic of faith, mental health, and relationships. Max Lucado has a long-term perspective, having been involved in church ministry for decades, and I really, truly do appreciate his wisdom. So great to see his heart for young children and their families. I hope the message about the importance of supporting young families came through loud and clear today. The early years really are the most important years, and we owe it to our youngest members of society to do the best we can for them. Ensuring that our children do not lead lives of loneliness should be one of our top priorities as parents, and so reminding them of that every day makes total sense. Ultimately, we all seek meaning in our lives, and Max clearly articulated his source of meaning and purpose. I think it behooves all of us to ask ourselves, where do I find meaning and purpose? Because there's no doubt that when it comes to mental health, having purpose in life is essential in this regard. As Viktor Frankl, the Austrian psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor, wrote in his classic book, Man's Search for Meaning, those who have a why to live can bear almost any how. I know for many of our listeners, having a faith community has been foundational in staying connected and helping one another through hard times. And for most of us who have a faith, it goes even deeper than that. Now, for those of us who work in mental health, I think it's important that we don't ignore this aspect of people's story, both to understand their worldview, but also in terms of knowing where their potential supports lie. Okay, well, that's it for now for another show. Thanks again to Max Lucado for joining us today. It was a real treat to have him on the podcast today. And to find out more about Max and his many published works, check out his website, maxlucado.com. And you'll also find there the link to his latest children's book, Just in Case You Ever Feel Alone, and many others. Please tune in again next time and join Tony and I, Dr. Rob Meter, for another episode of the Smart Family Podcast. We want to help you and your family thrive. We want to give you advice on parenting, mental health, marriage, with the ultimate goal of helping you love being home.